Diary of Doom.
What's up, Druids? Welcome to the first chapter in what I hope are many chapters for the Diary of Doom podcast. This is a podcast for fans about fans, or vice versa, however you want to do that. For fans, about fans, about fans, for fans, whatever. It's up to you. Not limited here. No short of options. But anyway, this is about doom metal, stoner metal, everything that kind of falls under that umbrella, even going beyond it, because doom is such a expansive genre of music and has really just blossomed into this dark orchid of the subgenre as a subgenre in metal. So I've just been super into it lately, and this podcast is just going to be all about that, and just going to be talking with fans and hopefully eventually some bands about what it is that draws them to the genre and what got them into it. But you can follow along on the quest, so to speak. You can follow Diary of Doom over on Instagram at Diary of Doom. You can like the Facebook page, facebook.com/Diary of Doom. If you have a question about literally fucking anything, I don't care. If you want me to try and play a guessing game involving cards somehow, sure, why not? But nothing personal. You can send an email over to diaryofdoom1968@gmail.com. You can listen along and share and comment on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/diaryofdoom. And the important news is that this is the first episode, as I mentioned, and we'll see where this goes and takes me. But just to kick it off, as I mentioned, every episode we're going to have a different guest, at least, but maybe not. You know, sometimes we get to talking about a lot of things and I'll have people back on. But for my first guest that I have on the show is somebody I've become recent friends with due to the, we'll call it the small wonder of social media. And we have quite a mutual bond over several doom metal bands, but also a lot of music outside of that. My buddy, August West. Say hello, August.
What's up, y'all? What's going on, Dylan?
Not much. Thank you for joining me on the first episode of this probably inevitable shit show of a podcast.
No, thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you so much, man. I'm actually really flattered. I'm super flattered. Honestly.
Yeah, I just like, you know what? I'm like, this dude knows his shit. So he'd be like the perfect guy to just like kick this sucker off. So August and I are like many other people at this point in time. Big fans of the band Sleep, and we are in a Facebook group all about the band. So, yeah, you know, you're a little bit older than me, and you've actually got some tie-ins to the scene and whatnot. How did you, because I know that you're into other bands outside of the Sleep and the Obsessed and all that, because you're also really into the Dead. So Ooh. How did you first get into the music, and what came first? Was it the Dead or the Doom?
Oh. You know what? It was grindcore and death metal.
Okay.
That's what it was. It was really extreme metal at first. That's what I got to say. The first music I was really, really drawn to was really, really brutal, man. It was as fast or as ugly as it could be. I mean, obviously, when I was a kid, I liked, you know, here and there, you know, growing up in the 80s, you know, I'd hear Bobby Brown and the Talking Heads on the radio, you know, and I love it. But it was when I started actually kind of like digging music for myself and, you know, really going out there and looking for music and stuff. It was really extreme death metal and grindcore.
Now, I kind of went through an opposite where I was not drawn to those genres of music when I started getting into music a bit more expansively, which was like when I was in college. I actually was not into that stuff at all. I was way more into like proggy metal and kind of like more accessible metal with like a few more, I guess, like some light intense stuff here and there, but like really not at all. And then I remember like college I was going on to the radio station. I remember I had to, as like gifts for the departing previous radio board directors, we had to make mixtapes or a CD, And I had to do one for a guy, and I had to make him a mixtape for Converge, which was like, and I had to listen to all these bands. I was like, I don't know what the fuck this guy, why? I was like, why? Which is funny, because like, I dig the shit out of Converge now. But yeah, I kind of went the opposite, where I had to really develop an appreciation for the more extreme forms of metal, which is not, some of which are not even that extreme by the standards of how we like to rank metal. As you know, metalheads are very all about like figuring out what is what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's me to a T, you know. And it wasn't, it was a little bit crazy for me, because that real fuck you brutality, you know what I mean? It was softened for me by pure talent. I was so into that stuff, because when you're into that kind of music, and especially if you play that kind of music, you are in. I mean, not everybody, I can't really generalize and say everybody, but I can say that everybody that plays that music is in this little box that really only contains those kind of bands. And I got, that box got smashed for me by Warren Haynes and Government Mule. One time I went and saw them in Philly in 1997, and I never saw a band fit so many styles of music into one show while simultaneously rocking the fuck out so hard for 4 hours straight. It was like, it took me to another level. That was the first time I really, really got open to music. And that's when I was like, whoa, there's so much more out there. There's so much more out there. And that was the defining moment for me, as far as like, that's when I decided I wanted to play music, was that right around then. That was a good time.
I'm trying to think of the show that like kind of made me sort of like switch over. It actually may have been a Def Heaven show, because I remember that was like the first like really intense metal show that I remember going to. And I, you know, I'm sure some people would, you know, disagree or whenever talk shit, whatever. But I remember that was a very weird experience, because I was like, this is definitely something I'm not used to. So that was like weirdly like opened up my perspective to like what I'm like, there's a lot of other, there is a whole other world of music out there that has a certain, and it's like, I guess like it's an edge or a darkness to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what it is, I would say. It's got a horror movie kind of feel to it.
Yeah. You know, it's just, and it's funny, because like a lot of this stuff has just been around for such a long time and people didn't really know about it. Or not that people didn't know about it. There's always been fans, there's no doubt. But it's interesting how it grew into the lexicon of like, you know, the 2010s.
Blows my mind.
It's crazy. It's absolutely bonkers. Mind. And I'm a recent convert of it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know what? Well, I'm glad. That's all I can say.
So you saw the Warren Haynes.
It was, at the time, it was Government Mule. It was Warren Haynes, Alan Woody. He was, oof, that dude was a monster bass player, man. That dude was insane. Anybody that plays the bass, you should check out Alan Woody's work with Government Mule and the Allman Brothers too in the 80s. But I had first saw him with Government Mule, and he was actually the kind of guy that I was like, whoa, I was like, I want to do what he does. You know what I mean? I want to play, you know. That was right around the time. See, and it was all right around that time. Like I discovered them, I discovered weed, and I discovered Doom. Doom is right in that 96, 97 era. Was first I discovered Sleep, Electric Wizard. I discovered Grief, bands like that, you know. I don't know how to put it, man, because back then there was no stoner rock. There was no scene as there is today. It was only, I'm trying to think of, there would be one show come around every 4 years, every two years, you know, there'd be one really good show. There'd be shows going on across the country, but back then it was, you'd only hear about them after they happened, you know, because really back then there really was no internet back then. It was all word of mouth and the guy at the record store telling you all the stuff. It was a cool time, man, actually. It was you got to know bands, honestly. You picked up a CD and you got to know You got to make your decision based upon the record label, the shirts the dudes were wearing, the bands that were on the dude shirts and the pictures, and word of mouth, what dude at behind the counter had to say.
Not at all what like got me into it. It's just like, it's like the polar opposite of that. It's so interesting, like how long it took for it to come up to this level, and now it's just so in the forefront with like a few other forms of metal that haven't always been in the forefront. But I don't know what it is that it super draws people in, and I think a lot of it has to do with just like the times, and like the music is generally just like it's somber, it's dreary, it's it kind of makes you feel like this weight of the world sort of feeling.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do, I think, with like they're going through something and I'm going through something.
Yeah,
kind of the Peter Steele kind of Kurt Weinstein from Crowbar kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's not like these, and it's not like up until recently some of these bands have been playing like, you know, major venues or anything. These are always like small time guys, you know, and well, these are always small time people in the grand scheme of things up until now, which is crazy when you think that there's like a, you know, because we went to it, you know, an event like Psycho Las Vegas. I'm like looking at the fucking poster that I took from there.
What a time, man. Great
time.
And
it's just like, it's crazy. It's insane to think something like that exists, but it's also great. But I'm kind of getting sidetracked. You know, I was going to say, you know, we share another thing in common, that we're both of New Jersey heritage.
Oh, shit.
So like when you're growing up in like the late 90s, like where's all this happening? Because I know quite a few people, family included, that like grew up in, you know, the New York punk scene, and this even like well into like the 80s. And I guess at that point, some people had like moved on or whatever, but like still people that grew up in like even into like the late 80s and even through the 90s and like all that alternative scene of there, you know, a lot of people are just, they didn't seem to really like, this area didn't seem to notice doom as much as some of the other areas that it's more well known for, like the Bay Area or like Baltimore, or not Baltimore, but like the DC area. So what was it here? Like, what's your frequent, like who's stopping by?
You know what it was, man? Back then it was, we had the Birch Hill in Old Bridge, a killer club. We had the killer club. It was a killer club. It didn't sound all that great in there, but they had great bands. The security guys, they would beat the shit out of you and kill you, dude, but throw you down the stairs, all types of shit. But they had great bands. I saw Clutch there 100,000 times. I saw Slayer there. I saw System of a Down in them. I saw System of a Down, Clutch, and Slayer all together at the same show at the Birch Hill. It was probably, it was the hottest show I think I've ever been to, the most oversold show I've ever think I've been to still to this day. But still one of the most legendary. System of Down, nobody knew who the hell System of Down was. Their first album had just came out. SOU was playing them at the time. And they got on that tour. And honestly, they weren't really all that well received. Imagine that at a Slayer, Clutch and Slayer show. But I digress. We had the Birch Hill. We had
Well, if I could just interrupt quickly, like seriously, if you put that, if you did Slayer, Clutch, System of a Down tour now, you'd probably have a sold out like show.
Yeah, you could do like easily. I mean, Starland Ballroom could sell over two nights of that, you know, Friday and Saturday easily. I mean, Clutch sells them out by themselves two nights usually around Christmas time.
I got my ticket. I'm going.
Oh, you do? Excellent. Excellent. Excellent.
I think I've seen them on their holiday run I looked back the other day and it's got to be going on like 7 or 8 years now, which is insane.
they are absolutely one of my favorite bands and one of my favorite live bands to still go see. I've seen them probably more than any other band. Not if you count like Dead shows and stuff like that all mixed up together, but shit, man, it's Clutch's shit. I mean, just listen to them, folks. That's all I can say. If you haven't, check them out. That self-titled album is something else.
Clutch was the first band that I got punched in the face.
Oh, you know, that's funny. That's the first band my friend Pete punched anybody in the face.
Wait, was it me?
I don't know. No. It was at the Birch Hill. It was.
Okay, I'm just joking.
It was. That was funny. He was younger than me, and in high school, and we used to take him to the Birch Hill shows, and we had to make sure we had him back before, you know, like his mom would scold us. We have to drop him off. But yeah, what we're talking about. The scene back then, man, was in Jersey, man. You know what it was? I have to talk about this, man. The New Brunswick basement scene. New Brunswick at that time had so many good shows, dude. And they were all DIY shows put on in basements that had a 7 foot, 6 foot, 5 foot ceiling, pipes dripping, shit water, as Terry from Grief would say. And kids were moshing around in the shit water. That there were so many bands that came through, bands that you would never even. I saw this band on tour from Holland called Seeing Red, and I had never heard. I got into all these bands, by the way. Big shout out to my buddy Chris Burmeister, who is writing that book about the New Brunswick basement scene and about how the Central Jersey music scene is kind of like an overlooked little music scene in itself. And he just texted me the other day. He's got over 100 interviews for this book, and it should be coming out soon. I'll let everybody know when it does. But Chris, big shout out to Chris Burmeister. He's the one that got me into all these shows, man. He was my next door neighbor back then. We just moved into a house on the other side of North Brunswick, and he was my neighbor. And I was walking. It was like my first day moved into this new house, and I remember going outside and I heard drums. I heard drums, the loudest, fastest drumming I ever heard. I'm 13 years old, and I heard this drumming that was just blast beats. It's like, what the hell is that? And I followed them, and I went right up to this kid's window, and I was like, what the hell? I started yelling in his window, and he came out, and we just started talking. He had a Extreme Noise Terror shirt on. We're like 13 years old. This kid's wearing an Extreme Noise Terror shirt. He turned me on to all of that old grindcore, all that stuff, Grief, Exhumed, Incantation, Immolation. Our buddy Kyle, who was a guitar player, he was the first kid I ever saw who had a Marshall half stack in his room. And that, he used to shred so fast on the guitar that pick dust would become flying off. And yeah, it was just, that was the big basement scene in New Brunswick back then was just, if I could give you a list of all the bands I've seen down there, I can't, because I can't remember and it was too long ago. Notable mentions: Seeing Red, Death Threat from Tennessee. Believe it or not, God Forbid, this old metal band from New Brunswick that they were kind of like almost a deathcore band. Like they broke up since, but they were pretty good. They bigged up New Brunswick. They're all from New Brunswick. I used to work at a studio in New Brunswick called Big Noise. And it was, we used to see all these bands and many bands actually would come down. Bands would come down from the city because it was so cheap to play. And back then, and that was all around that time. It was a good time for music. It was a good time. Jersey, CBGB's was still open. Sunday matinees. I'm serious. You'd see for $6 at CBGB's, you would see Plutocracy, Seeing Red, Discordance Axis. Trying to think of who else. Pig Destroyer, Agoraphobic Nosebleed. And there was one, oh, Dillinger Escape Plan, all in the same day for $5 on Sunday, starting at noon.
I was lucky enough to see Dillinger twice. I mean, it was pretty easy to see them when they were like around, but I saw them on the farewell tour, not in New Jersey or New York. I saw them in Philadelphia, which was awesome. It was super good. Oh, yeah, I was going to mention it. You know, you mentioned a Sunday matinee. I'm actually going to a Sunday matinee in November. There's this great band out of Brooklyn called Godmaker. You should look them up. They're a three-piece, you know, classic sort of doom outfit, but like just super good. I saw them open up for Acid King. Like 2 years ago. And what's been funny is that every time that we've been trying to see them since, we have been unable to for like whatever reason, like we were going to be away or we were going to, we had something else going on. It was like just not a convenient time. And then a bunch of shows got canceled because their drummer got injured, but they finally are having another show and they have, I guess, fill in. They wanted it to happen anyway. So I'm stoked to check them out. They're a great band.
Nice.
Another band they're playing with is Hyborian. I've seen them open up for Weed Eater. They're an awesome band. Another sick band. But yeah, just to follow up to your stuff. So that's sick.
Yeah, I mean,
it sounds like it was, in terms of it being like an experience, it's a little bit special because it's like not everyone really knew about it. And not everybody was going to know about it because there's other sort of underground genres that popped up way more quickly than it, you know, grunge, for example, and then like just within metal, like, you know, death metal really took off as like, you know, hair metal was essentially dead and thrash was kind of transitioning, right, into a sort of a different animal.
We're not going to talk about that.
It's not a thrash metal podcast.
No, it's, I can't describe really. I mean, the intensity of being, you know, slammed into a basement with shit, 100 other people getting, you know, dripped on with all kinds of shit and just being sung to right in the face, you know, and getting hit with the blood from the snare drum, the guy's knuckles, and just all that kind of, that feeling is anybody that's been to that kind of show knows it. Even if there aren't 100 people there, even if there's only 2 people there. And the bands are your friends, you know, and they're just playing their heart out for you guys. And it's just the feeling of playing rock and roll, man. It's the feeling of just letting it all out, you know. That's why we do this, you know. That's why we that's why we all go see these bands, is because we love to see people do that.
What were your first doom records?
A standout doom record. Definitely. I could tell you the first time I walked into Kyle's bedroom. And he was playing Return Trip from Electric Wizard, Return Trip from Come My Fanatics. Dope Throne had not come out yet. We had nothing. He had just gotten the CD and we had nothing, had never heard anything like that. He called me up when because he had got the CD. I wasn't there. He called me up and he said, I remember exactly what he said. He said, "Randall, you need to get over here at my house. I found a band that's heavier than Mortician, but they play really, really slow." And I said, "What? I gotta hear this." And I hung up the phone and I went over there. And when I walked up the stairs, I could hear it rumbling throughout the whole house. And I see he had a kick-ass stereo in his upstairs bedroom. I walked in and it was playing that fucking. I was like, "Oh my god, oh my god, this is amazing." And then he started singing, because it wasn't like, I had heard slow, heavy bands like Grief and stuff, but they always came with that, you know, real abrasive like black metal, you know. And, Electric Wizard didn't have that. They didn't have that. They had that, you know, he had that, for all intents and purposes, that kind of Ozzy kind of sounding, you know, not that he sounds like Ozzy at all.
Like,
but
like a weird, like sort of wailing voice.
Exactly.
And it's not like Ozzy. It's just, I've always had a hard time describing Juz Oburn's vocals. I think a wailing voice is sort of like the best way I can describe it.
He reminds me, honestly, of kind of like a 50-50 mix between Ozzy and David Gilmour when he's like mad. Like when David Gilmour has like those little bit of angry songs and he's got that little bit of a to his voice. If you could kind of intensify that, he kind of sounds like that. I think. Maybe I'm just stoned.
That could very well be true.
But yeah, those, man, Dope, and then Dope Throne came out. Oh, fucking forget about it, man. That was it. That was when I put the Electric Wizard Dope Throne back patch on my leather jacket. And that's when I was bathed in doom. And ever since then, man, it was Warhorse, As Heaven Turns to Ash. That album, when it came out, knocked me sideways. And then I saw the Wizard and Warhorse back then play a show together in Brooklyn. Or in Manhattan, excuse me. And that kind of changed my life. That was really good. Sleeps Holy Mountain, amazing, amazing record. Always will be. Back then, I'm trying to think of the real standout doomy kind of records back then. Those were the big two. Dope Throne, I would say, and Holy Mountain. back then. Well, I would say that Sky Valley, Caius, Welcome to Sky Valley, was big with us back then too. Still is one of my favorite records. Not so much Doom, more of like a little, you know, psychedelic rock, but still amazing.
But you're getting that, you know, you're getting the foundations for what's going to eventually, you know, evolve into like the desert rock scene and the sort of, not even like, and quite frankly, not like sort of the more revivalist bands that you see kind of from like more into like the 2000s and into now, like really like legitimate, just sort of like the transition of like hard rock with, you know, you get like you get a band like, you know, Nebula, for example, kind of taking from the 70s, you know, hard rock scene, but not in the way that Doom bands like, you know, like, well, obviously like The Obsessed or Spirit Caravan or, you know, Sleep.
Church of Misery.
Yeah, Church of Misery, Acid King. You know, so you're just seeing, but it's funny how those all kind of like, they all stem from the same one focal point, which we all know what that is at this point. So, but yeah, it's very interesting.
It's amazing, man. It's subgenres within subgenres within subgenres. Black Sabbath, in my opinion, is the most influential band. I think they're more influential than the Beatles, man. They spawn so many bands.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And you know what? And a fairly good portion of them are fucking really good, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It does. It blows my mind. You know what I mean? I honestly, it's amazing. You know, getting to see, I never thought I'd be able to say, you know what I'm doing this year for New Year's? I'm going to see Sleep 3 nights in a row in Chicago. What? If you'd have told myself back then, if you'd have told myself that that's what it was going to be like now, I'd have told you were effing crazy.
Well, at that point too, you even got to, I'm not sure what you got to see of it, but I mean, you got to see like the reformation of that band from the beginning 10 years ago. Like just, you know, this year was when they got back together, and that's that was such a pivotal moment.
Oof. Yeah, I mean, you were there, man. You saw it.
I mean, I when that happened, I was just graduating high school. So I didn't even know what Sleep was at that point, outside of the concept that I loved so much.
Oh, no, I meant
bad
I meant,
joke.
You've seen Sleep. I mean,
oh, yeah, I've seen Sleep. So like, I get it. But it's but I mean, you know, just to kind of bring it back to what you were talking about earlier with the other bands, you know, well, kind of 2 points is that I do feel like that, like I mentioned, other you like other kinds of music, and this is a twofold point because, you know, you also are very into like stuff like what's his name, the Bug.
Oh, dub. You mean like, yeah, dub music and like reggae and dub music. Yeah, absolutely. Shit, I fell in love with the music of Jamaican, man. That stuff is so heavy. Some of those, the Studio One recordings, folks. Any doom heads out there that are listening that like really heavy bass and really crisp, super clean recordings of amazing music, check out the old Studio One, King Tubby, Augustus Pablo, 70s, the second wave after Marley of reggae and dub that came out of Jamaica, folks. And trust me, you will find some of the most amazing music. It's so good. It is so good.
What is Augustus? It? I'm going to write it down. Is it?
Oh, Studio yeah. One? Yeah, the Studio One, anything, like pretty much anything that came out of Studio One, King Tubby's, that's another studio. Anything that's, you know, all those old Scientist records. Scientist is a mixer from Studio One. That's where he started. And then he went out and kind of did his own thing. Augustus Pablo is a very amazing artist, super underrated artist from Jamaica. He plays the melodica, is his chosen instrument. So every time you hear like a melodica kind of in music, because it was at the time a children's instrument, a children's toy, and what he did was he brought it into the forefront of Jamaican dub music by playing it on all these dub records. And you'll hear it on any kind of reggae song, you know what I mean, at some, listen to reggae for any period of time, and that instrument will pop up. a little wind-blown piano called a melodica. It was Augustus Pablo Records. Ooh. What was the question again?
My follow-up point to that is that, and I know there's been some strong opinions about this from the fan base, but I do feel that sleep is somewhat like the Dead in terms of how the fan base operates, the merch.
I could not agree more, man. And in my opinion, people that say it's not like that, just stop, because you just said it, man. Everything, the merch, the way the people are about the merch, the way the band puts out the merch, the vibe of the shows, the switching up of the set lists, bust outs of songs that haven't been played in a while that come out, you know, the multiple runs of venues, the highly focused improvisations, things of that nature. I always feel lend credence to both of those bands being very similar in vibe, not in sound. I'm not saying that the Grateful Dead sounds like Sleep, folks. You know, obviously couldn't be further from the truth, but they share a lot more than people think in common.
I don't think it's a bad thing either.
No, absolutely not. Well, not my opinion, because I love the Dead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I'm not a Deadhead, but I mean, I fucking love Sleep. So it's like, I just think it's an interesting kind of like observation. It's definitely been brought up before. So, you know, you answered this before. The record that broke you was Come My Fanatics, right?
I would say, well, it was Come My Fanatics into Dope Throne. Dope Throne was the first official, like, this is the music that I really, like, I you know, as I said, I had seen Clutch. I was a big Clutch fan, too. But it wasn't like, as much as I don't really care so much for the band now, in their later records, but those first, the first lineup, the original lineup of the Electric Wizard, Dope Throne, is probably, in my opinion, one of the greatest and the most pivotal records in this genre that's in a genre that's in a genre that's in a genre.
I don't think I can disagree with that. It's like insane. You know, I remember like listening to Electric Wizard in college, but I wasn't ready for it yet. But I remember feeling like, I feel like kind of cool listening to this. I probably shouldn't, but I was like, this seems kind of cool. And then I remember like somebody I was working with when I was working in retail was going, and I remember I was like, fuck, I want to go to that show. They shouldn't go to that show. I should be going to that show. But I think for me, sort of the way that I got into it was, definitely by working on the college radio station. I found out a lot of cool bands, like a band like Zoroaster, which they haven't put out a record in a long time. But one of the guys in that band is now in Royal Thunder, Will. Sick band.
Sick band.
Found out about Weed Eater. Pretty early on, but they were sort of a later favorite of mine. But the ones that kind of got me in, and like, you know, of course, before I got into college, I like, you know, was into Pink Floyd and I like Black Sabbath. Got a little bit more into Sabbath than it in college because it's fucking cool ass music. It's like you put a Black Sabbath song on, and regardless of who I would be hanging out with, nerds, stoners, jocks, like people were into it. It didn't really matter. You know, maybe not like, you know, War Pigs in a college dorm room, but like, you know, it's like Paranoid comes on or like Supernaut. In terms of like actually developing like a fondness for the genre, the bands that I think that got me into it were Fu Manchu. Definitely. Like, I just like thought that was the coolest sounding fucking record that I had heard.
That's another, I'm sorry to cut you off. Really?
Oh, quick, no, it's fine.
The Action Is Go is also a very notable mention from back then. Fu Manchu was one of the, and still is one of the greats. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Yeah. It was No One Rides for Free. It was the first one I listened to. And it's, I don't know if it's as heralded as, you know, The Action Is Go or Search Of, but that was like, I just fucking love that record, man. I listened to it so much. So like that was the one. Sleep, Holy Mountain, I cranked a lot. Earth, I really liked. Earth was sort of like the first slow, super slow and like more droney type stuff that I got into. I was really into that. Not so much of Sun, because Sun, I didn't really, again, kind of like the other more extreme, heavier versions of metal that I would be more into now, I didn't have the appreciation for. I didn't have the patience for it. I'm trying to think what else. Boris was another one that I didn't dive too deep into their discography because it was really big, but it was the split they did with Ian Astbury that I liked. And also I listened to Absolute Ego, and that was sort of like, that was kind of like when the, it was like the first time I listened to My Bloody Valentine. And it was just like, oh, what is this? This sounds really fucking bizarre and out there.
Mm, yeah. You know, this is embarrassing. I had never heard the term shoegaze until like maybe 2 years ago. I never knew it. I never heard the term before. I knew bands that sounded like that. You know what I mean? Like My Bloody Valentine and stuff like that. That's what they call that music, right?
Yeah.
I tell you, I never knew that. Honestly, I never knew that.
That's really fucking funny,
isn't it?
I like some other shoegazy bands. I guess like Spaceman 3 is kind of a shoegazy band. I definitely dug them too. But yeah, those were probably kind of the four ones. Actually, Original Saint Vitus, like with before Wino joined the band, I listened to some of that stuff and I enjoyed that as well. But yeah, those I think were kind of like the ones that covered that area of it. And now it's just like I'm always on the outlook. I'm always keeping my eyes out for somebody new and doing something cool. And you know, of course, I'm just like looking to scratch off another band on the list. So now that we kind of got to understand, you know, you yourself, like another part of this podcast I want to do is to have like a spotlight on a band of the week per episode or per chapter. So I have this book here that my girlfriend got for me. I forget if she got it for me as a Christmas present or a birthday present, but she gave it to me. It's called The Dude Metal Lexicanum. It's by Alexei, I'm probably butchering this guy's name, Alexei Evdokimov, I think it is. And it's quite a comprehensive encyclopedia of all doom metal bands. Not every single doom metal band, but a lot that I'm not familiar of. I think because a lot of them are, this covers a lot of international too, which is very cool. Because I feel like you see a lot of focus on mostly American doom and like, you know, and British doom, but you don't see as much, I feel like, coverage kind of outside of that. Like even Jeers, one that I can be, I'm going to be honest, I'm not familiar with Psychedelic Witchcraft out of Italy. They're more recent. So that's,
see that, isn't that cool though, man, that it's so fast, that what we were talking about before about how the genre is moving so exponentially that print can't even keep up with it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know what I mean?
It's a lot from fucking Italy. That's crazy.
Dude, big, yeah, there's some bands from Italy and France that are amazing. Like we could do a whole, honestly, we could do a podcast on instrumental stoner bands from France. I know of at least six of them.
Oh, I believe it.
Holy Weed, you know, that band Hazy C, check them out, folks. Hazy C, that band is really good.
I'm gonna write this down. Yeah, this is another part of this podcast.
King Weed as well. I guess another one. King Weed from France, instrumental stoner band from France. They have a bunch of good albums. King Weed.
Just more bands that I'll,
yeah, it's crazy.
Never be able to listen to before I die.
Well, you know what's crazy though, man, is like that now we're getting to see these bands before we die. And that's crazy.
That's true. I mean, hopefully you never know what's gonna happen. Not to get all dark and everything. What I wanna do is just, I'm gonna flip through this book and we're gonna have a different band of the week based on entries in this. So our first band for band of the week is The Gates of Slumber. They're from the United States. Originally, they are from Indianapolis. And, you know, like I said, I picked these bands at complete random. And I'm, you know, I'll check them off and everything. But I remember sending the band to you, and you were like, I think I know this band. Like, yeah. Actually know the band.
Well, not know. I knew of them for sure. I'd heard at least one. I definitely heard one of their albums. I had heard Conqueror. My buddy Pete had found the CD somehow. And he had played it for me. I remember, honestly, I wasn't as blown away at the time. But now that, since you've sent me the band and I have dived into their catalog extensively, that I should have been paying more attention to this band.
It's what's funny is that the records, according to the encyclopedia, at least the ones I listened to, I did not get around to listening to Conqueror, which is actually one of the listed albums here to listen to. So shame on me. But the listing of the records is not correct on Spotify, from what I can tell, because I listened to them. Yeah, right. I listened to them in the order of Suffer No Guilt, Hymns of Blood and Thunder, The Awakening, and The Wretch. Now, that doesn't actually make any sense because The Awakening was released in 2004, although this has it listed as 2010, so I'm wondering if maybe it's like a reissue or something.
That's probably what happened.
And Suffer No Guilt was the second release, and Hymns was the, you know, according to this, the third release, and they have The Wretch correct as the last release. So I listened to them, I guess, technically out of order, which is funny because I felt like The Awakening was my least, not that one, sorry. I felt like Suffer No Guilt was my least favorite of the releases, but I felt like they got better in the order they went in. So I went in the order of Suffer No Guilt, Hymns of Blood and Thunder, The Awakening, and The Wretch, which is funny that I felt that they stuck the landing on The Awakening because that's the first release. And I liked that one, I think, the best.
Yeah, me too, honestly.
Because they did something weird with Suffer No Guilt where they had a lot of like quiet moments with like very like weird sort of like drony almost experimental getting to like sound effects. I mean, I hope we listen to the same record, but like something about that like didn't really click with me. I was just like, I don't know what's going on here.
That's the thing about this band is that they are so freaking dynamic. They go in so many freaking directions that it's almost unreal musically to me. I've never heard a band that sounded like so many other bands in like one song. The parts of the songs, right? Okay, you know how Elder's really big on like parts of song, like really long songs with different parts in them?
Yes.
This band is probably one of the better bands to ever do this. Elder is amazing at it as well, by the way. But the way that a band can go from sounding like Saint Vitus to the Misfits to almost like a hair metal-y Manowar. Like a Manowar.
Yeah, exactly. Like
Manowar.
Power metal.
Power metal style of music to that parts that like on a Nile record would be like ancient Egyptian instruments. But with these guys is, I think, Viking flutes and drums, war drums. Stuff like that, those kind of stuff, you know what I mean? But all mashed into one song that's 17 minutes long, and it's amazing. And you're like, how the hell do they fucking remember all this shit? And it's honestly, I'm really kind of upset that I never saw this band.
Yeah, they, you know, just to dive into some background here, the main guy behind it is a dude named Carl Simon. It started out as his own project. You know, you mentioned that. You know, I'm just kind of picking out some spark notes here. But, you know, you did mention that all the influences are heard. You can hear a lot of them. You know, they point out that I definitely got like a lot of like Wino era Vitus and Obsessed from there. From them. But, you know, like you said, also like a lot of hard rock and also like a lot of power metal. They rounded out the first lineup with Chuck Brown and Jason McCatch. Yeah, they even toured with Vitus and Manila Road. Oh, okay. It's very, another thing is about it is that, you know, with doom, there's, I feel like you do get these kinds of songs, but not always in this manner. And I think this is kind of where like the more of the power metal and sort of like classic metal elements of the band show through is that, you know, a lot doom, I feel like, has sort of like a horror vibe, or if you go in a little more like psychedelic stoner, you're going to get some like sci-fi vibe. Or if you're just going for like real doom, you're just going for like, there's also just like really bleak, dark, depressing lyrics, you know, a band that you turned me on to, Warhorse. I mean, that's just like fucking brutal ass going through some shit.
But uplifting.
Yeah, in a weird way too.
Holy uplifting. In my eyes, at least.
Whereas Gates of Slumber has more of like a lot of like the more like fantastical elements and like a lot of, like all their like album covers are like basically Conan the Barbarian. So it's like all that crazy shit, which I know there's a crossover with that. And like,
dude, why do you think Pete bought the album?
Oh, because he was like a huge Conan. I was about to say Conan O'Brien.
He was
because he's a huge Conan Conan fan.
Yeah. Yeah, the artwork on the cover. The dude had it's like a Viking chopping off somebody's fucking head. Yeah, it's old school.
Yeah, it says here they even took lyrics from for one song straight out of a Robert E. Howard book.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, they toured a lot. Says here, Carl's quote is they played with like some big fucking bands: Cathedral, Pentagram, Place of Skulls, Penance, Dream Death. But it looks. They switched a lot of band members around. Like yes. There was this guy Carl's been the only like consistent member of the band. You know, so he's obviously like the driving force behind it.
Quick note: One of the drummers of Gates of Slumber, Mr. Jamie Walters, played in a band called Boulder at one point. And Boulder, I saw in New Brunswick, in a basement, nice. And they. Fucking rocked. They played with this band that was actually two bands in one. They played, the first band played, and it was like a normal hardcore band. They took a break. That band was called Nine Shocks Terror, by the way. Okay. This band, Nine Shocks Terror, they played regular hardcore band. No, they were good. They were really good, though. They took a break, came back. As this band called the Gordon Soley Motherfuckers. They all wore luchador wrestling masks, and the merch guy came up and was the singer.
Wow. Now,
it was amazing. And they played a wholly different style of music, still hardcore in its own vein, but wholly different. It was amazing. And then this band Boulder comes up, and Boulder is not a hardcore. When I say hardcore band, I mean bands that play like old New York style hardcore bands, like the bands that love Minor Threat, the bands that love Fugazi, the bands that love the Bad Brains, the bands that love the real fast old hardcore bands, those kind of sounding bands. And this band Boulder didn't sound like this at all, because a lot of those bands that played those New Brunswick basement shows were hardcore bands. They were a metal band, a thrashy old school metal band. And they played an amazing old school thrashy metal set. And I was right in the front. And they, at one point, they closed their show with, the guy says into the mic, he says, they both played Flying V's, Gibson Flying V guitars, two guitar players. The bass player was the singer. But the two guitar players played Flying V's. And one guy had a Motley Crue shirt on. And the other guy had a Kiss shirt on. Now, when these guys rolled up to this show, and got out of this van, these old guys at the point, because they were older than us. I was like, you know, I'm indifferent to it, but a lot of the kids that were at this show were like, what is going on here? But then they got up and they loved it. They put on an amazing show. They closed the show and the guy says into the mic, he says, we're going to do a Motorhead cover because we're playing at the Court Tavern, which is down in New Brunswick, which is a legendary venue. Patti Smyth, Bruce Springsteen, many, many, many. I myself have played there before. Still there too. Great, great venue, Court Tavern. They were playing at the Court Tavern. They were doing a Motorhead tribute show, and they were doing a whole set of Motorhead. But they came to this show earlier. This was an earlier, and all these hardcore shows into the New Brunswick basement scene all happened during the day. That if you started playing music like that at night, like putting on a show, somebody would, they would shut it down. So all these shows happened, they all started at 11 o'clock in the morning. So this, you know, the, this band, and they came and they played a set of their original music, this band Boulder, who I'm pretty sure is not around. And they were like, yeah, let's do a Motorhead cover. Let's do Motorhead, the song Motorhead. And they were like, does anybody want to help us sing? And basically everybody just sung the song. But when they turned the mic around, it was basically like just in my face, and everybody was just kind of singing around me. And it was just a really fun time. Everybody was just singing Motorhead by Motorhead. Boulder. Yeah. But that dude ended up playing in the Gates of Slumber. A weird tie around to everything. Rant over.
No, that's exactly what I'm looking for, is that kind of stuff. Like, that's why this is interesting to me. Because there is that massive like net that is like cast out, and like how many like people it catches under, you know, that's within the thing, it. Man,
I've never played in a successful band. I'm just a big fan that's gone to a shitload of shows. I mean, I have played in bands and have opened for different bands and stuff, you know, here and there in Jersey and around, but I'm by no means anybody, you know, that would be known. It's weird though that the genre has become so huge that just me being around back then and now my knowledge and my appreciation of the genre has got me onto like a fucking awesome little podcast here. We get to talk about doom metal. Again, mind blowing, man. Mind blowing.
I do appreciate that. And yeah, there's this, that's what this is all about, is just to understand like, you know, what the appeal is to people and like how it clicked with them and like why it clicks and all that. So, but we'll wrap up here kind of with the Gates of Slumber. Unfortunately, the drummer Jason McCash had a heroin addiction. He died just shortly before that. The band did call it quits and they were pretty much done. The last show here is listed at Days of the Dune Fest. It was the summer before Jason passed, and their last record they put out was the Wretch in 2011 on Rise Above Records. Which I thought was pretty good, but I think my favorite was The Awakening. Probably the two songs I liked the most were Judge and Jury. The Awakening is a great record. Definitely check it out. I thought The Wretch was pretty good, too.
Agreed.
But all is not lost here, as Carl is actually working in a new project. I don't know as of right now. And it is called Wretch. Essentially the same name as the final album of The Gates of Slumber. Let's see Wretch.
You know what that might mean? It might mean that this new band is going to sound like them.
Maybe.
Which probably will, because he's the guitar player, right? And he's the guy.
Wretch, you can actually go check out Wretch on Bandcamp. They have an active Bandcamp.
Guess what I'm doing after this.
The last record they put out, or at least it's an EP, was released on July 12, 2017, and that's called Bastards Born.
Awesome.
They're also based out of Indianapolis, so you can go check out Carl's band there, and you can throw your support behind him. So definitely check out The Gates of Slumber, check out Wretch, and that's actually going to do it for this first chapter of Diary of Doom. So just wanted to say thank you to August for being the first guest on the show. I think that it would be a mistake to not have you back on at some point. So, you know, we'll figure out another time and we'll get you back on here and we'll kind of do this and see what other, you know, new fun little features and maybe some games or trivia that we'll do that are all sort of Doom related. You know, I know that you're... Another passion of yours is fishing, actually, and you've been posting your fishing pictures on Facebook. I don't know what other kind of, like, if you have any other social media presence or if you're doing anything like that, or if you're just like, no, fuck all that bullshit. You know, we don't have to go into that whole rigmarole, this would be your time to plug anything you want people to see.
You know, I love the one versus one aspect of it, you know what I mean? I think it's kind of like hunting, except nobody dies. You know, it's I love catch, photo, and release, man. I love trying to catch as many different species as I can. You know what I mean? I love, it's because I live in Minnesota right now. I live outside of Minneapolis, and we have so many great lakes and out rivers and stuff. You know what I mean? And I was a fool to not take advantage when I first moved here. But these past 2 years, it really has bitten me. You know what I mean? I caught my first fish on a fly rod today. And that was fucking, dude, that feeling, whoo, forget that. I'm about to go spend a whole bunch of money. You know, I don't do it for anybody except myself. That's about it. The Facebook thing is really, I love Facebook only for the aspect of getting to discuss music on a relatively safe platform where people aren't just going to come in and, you know, say their political opinion while you're talking about Miles Davis. As far as plugging anything, no. I'm good, man. Just if y'all want to see me, I'm over in the sleep group. Just, you know, sleep Facebook group. We can talk about sleep, and we can talk about a whole bunch of other music too, like we like to do. We love to discuss all things. It's the sleep group, not the doom group. But sleep is a doom band, so it's really weird trying to explain that to people. But
it's like, yeah. Again, it's my point from earlier is that people that like doom metal seem to like a lot of different kinds of music. So most people have a good ear and open mind to that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, definitely it's a good trading place. If you're looking for new tunes, it's definitely a good spot to hit up. It's essentially a watering hole for like new bands. And like, I've discovered some bands that have been around for like a while, and I was like, holy shit. It's just like it's like an endless well.
Yep. Everyone's always encouraged to share their bands that they play in and the music that they love freely. We don't talk about how much we hate music. You know, man to that. We talk about love. We love. That's it, man.
And as for Diary of Doom, you can follow the Instagram page at Diary of Doom. You can like page on Facebook at facebook.com/Diary of Doom. You can shoot me an email at diaryofdoom1968@gmail.com. And please follow along the podcast on SoundCloud. It'll be up at soundcloud.com/Diary of Doom, and that's where it will be until I don't want it to be there anymore. And that closes this chapter of Diary of Doom. What's up, Druids? Welcome to another, we're not using that fucking take because there's yet to be an episode.
Or you should
use fucking again. I should fucking write this down. That's what I should do. All right, whatever.